The Valley of Kashmir is a region to the northwest of the Indian subcontinent. It is sandwiched between Pakistan, India, and China, all three of which claim parts or whole of Kashmir. Pakistan and India specifically have a fierce and bloody rivalry over it. It goes back to the partition in 1947 when the British left and the Hindu ruler of Kashmir sided with India, even though the majority of the population of Kashmir was and remains Muslim. So, how did Islam find its way to this remote valley? This video is sponsored by Magellan TV. Magellan TV is a streaming service that hosts over 3,000 documentaries and shows in various genres, from history to science as well as travel and art. They're adding new shows all the time, which you can enjoy on all sorts of devices. Also, best of all, there are no ads and an increasing percentage of shows is available in 4K with no additional cost. They were kind enough to offer Al-Muqaddimah viewers an extended free month-long trial. You can go to try.magellantv.com/Al-Muqaddimah to take advantage of that. This week, I watched Bhutto, Politics in the Blood, which is the fascinating story of one of the most prominent political dynasties from my home country of Pakistan. This dynasty, along with other forces, wrote the fate of modern Pakistan on par with what the Kennedys and the Gandhis did for their respective countries. So I would highly recommend you watch it. Secondly, I watched Nero's Golden House, which tells the story of the Domus Aurea, which became a symbol of decadence and perversion as well as art in ancient Rome. Again, you can take advantage of a month-long free trial by clicking the link in the description. It would also help support the channel. Back to the video. During the first round of Arab conquests from 632, right after Muhammad's death, to 750, the year Umayyad Caliphate was overthrown, Arabs invaded Kashmir twice but failed. Once even under the command of Muhammad ibn Qasim, who had already conquered Sindh and vast portions of Punjab. For the next few centuries, there were minor Islamic emirates south of Kashmir, but Kashmir, being a valley surrounded on all sides by mountains, was isolated. In fact, it was so isolated that it became a refuge for rebels and people fleeing persecution. Islam finally broke into India on the back of Mahmud of Ghazni's horse. Mahmud, not his horse, established the first sultanate in India and also in the world because he was the first ruler to use the title of Sultan. Mahmud invaded Kashmir twice, once in 1015 and again in 1021, but both times he was pushed back by snowstorms. The Ghaznavids in India were replaced by the Ghurids, who didn't even try to invade Kashmir. From around the year 1000 to 1320, the valley was under the control of the indigenous Lohar dynasty. The last Lohar Raja, Suhadev, was either killed or fled when a Mongol general named Dulaja invaded. This left a vacuum for power. Suhadev himself hadn't been a very popular ruler due to his ruthless taxation, from which even the Brahmin priests weren't exempted. This vacuum for power was soon filled by a rebellious Tibetan prince named Rinchen. He had tried to overthrow his uncle in the kingdom of Ladakh, but after failing, he sought refuge in Kashmir, eventually rising up to rule it in 1320 after Lohar Raj collapsed. However, his reign was short and he died in 1323, but not before converting to Islam and changing his name to Sadruddin Shah. He had apparently been influenced by a Sufi missionary from Central Asia. Sufi missionaries at the time moved around a lot and established networks in various places. Although, according to one unlikely story, he had left his faith to chance and decided to convert to the religion of the first person he saw in the morning, who just happened to be Muslim. The story seems rather murky and unreliable, to be honest. He was the one who built the Grand Mosque, or Bodh Masjid, in Srinagar. He also built a new quarter in the city and named it Rinchenpur. During his reign, Rinchen had appointed a chief minister named Shahmir, who was probably an Iranian or a Persianized Turk. According to one story, he belonged to the ruling dynasty of Sawat. According to another, he was a descendant of Arjun, the great legendary warrior from Mahabharata himself. So as you can see, there's dispute about his ethnic background. Shahmir had moved to Kashmir during the reign of Suhadev and joined his court, where he became an influential figure. After Rinchen's death, Shahmir made a bid for the throne but failed as Rinchen's young son Haider was installed as king. However, Shahmir did manage to overthrow Rinchen's family in 1339. He took the title of Sultan Shamsuddin. He started the Islamization and Persianization of the valley. He even implemented the Zoroastrian calendar and did away with the Indian one already in use there. His rule was a successful one by all reasonable measures. He had brought together the pieces left behind by the Mongol invasion. His rule had been accepted by the Hindus, the Buddhists, and whatever little Muslim population the valley had at the time. He died in 1342. His grandson, Sultan Shahabuddin, ascended the throne in 1355 and expanded the Sultanate to Baltistan, Ladakh, and Jammu. He left the treasury empty in the process. A popular story goes that his Hindu finance minister even suggested melting the statues of Buddha that had been erected previously to mint coins, but the Sultan refused, saying he does not want to create an example for his successors. During Shahabuddin's reign, there couldn't have been many Muslim peasants in Kashmir based on the records and the fact that almost every minister in the court was Hindu. Other than a few mosques and charity kitchens here and there, the state does not seem to have sponsored Islam in any way by this point. However, Persian culture of the Muslims to the west in Iran was sponsored. During the reign of Shahabuddin's brother and heir, Qutbuddin, a Sufi master or Khwaja named Sayyid Ali Hamdani arrived in Kashmir. Sayyid Ali Hamdani would prove influential in converting Kashmir to Islam like his contemporary Bahauddin Naqshband would in Xinjiang. He was escaping the scourge of God, popularly known as Timur the Lame or Timur the Jerk. He arrived in 1381 along with some 700 pupils. Qutbuddin greeted them and gave them refuge. In return, Hamdani and his Sufis gave Qutbuddin legitimacy and connection to the wider world of Islam. It's said that Hamdani even gave his own headgear as a sign of approval and endorsement. According to some sources, Hamdani saw the Kashmiri monarchy as an abomination, as the Muslims and Hindus lived together and took cultural things from each other. He wanted to fix this. An example of this is that Qutbuddin had married two sisters at the same time. This went against Islamic law, where you cannot be married to two sisters who share both parents at the same time. Hamdani made Qutbuddin annul his marriages and remarry one of them while permanently divorcing the other. It makes sense that Hamdani would influence the Kashmiri monarchy, as most of Hamdani's work is about how commoners and sovereigns should conduct themselves in private and in public. Around the same time, a reformer was born among the Hindus as well. Laleshwari, or simply Lala, preached a simpler version of Hinduism where all were equal and not restrained by social hierarchy. She was against worshipping idols and called the stone idols of Hindu temples nothing more than the stone in the pavement. She used Kashmiri language for her teachings rather than Sanskrit because it was the language of the masses. Hence, she was and is revered by the Kashmiris, who could, for once, understand their religious leader as she spoke their language. Her ideas were very close to the ideas of the Sufis, and this helped bridge the gap between Islam and Hinduism. The Kashmiris would slowly use this bridge to convert to the religion of the ruling dynasty, that is, Islam. Additionally, the work of Rishis, who were a Sufi order of Muslims, also helped convert Kashmir to Islam. Like Laleshwari, they were drawing on the similarities between a simpler Hinduism, like the one preached by Laleshwari, and Sufism. Hamdani left Kashmir after some years, but his pupils established a network of Sufis throughout the valley that connected to the Sufis in India and Central Asia. As Timur's bloodthirsty forces raged in Central Asia and Persia, Sufi migrants moved to Kashmir. Sufism became intertwined with the right to rule to the point that Qutbuddin's successor, Sultan Sikandar, built a great shrine for Muhammad Hamdani, Ali Hamdani's son, which still stands in Srinagar's old city. Although surprisingly, Sanskrit, not Persian, remained the official language and much of the government was run by Hindu Brahmin ministers. This would mean that at that time there weren't many influential Muslims in the valley, around the year 1400 or so. Sultan Qutbuddin died in 1389 and was succeeded by his son Sikandar Shah. When Timur invaded India in 1398, he didn't seem to have any intentions of touching Kashmir. Instead, the barbarian emperor's eyes were set on Delhi, which he sacked thoroughly. However, his reputation had preceded him, and the Sultan of Kashmir, Sikandar Shah, sent gifts to him and swore loyalty. Timur didn't want much from him other than money. In contrast to his uncle, Shahabuddin, Sikandar Shah decided to plunder Hindu and Buddhist temples in Kashmir to melt down the statues and pay this money. He destroyed at least four temples, which gave him the title of Botshukan or iconoclast. To secure more power, he allied himself with puritanical Sufis such as the aforementioned Muhammad Hamdani. This led to a crackdown on non-Muslims in Kashmir. Jizya, a head tax on non-Muslims, was implemented. Hindu Brahmins, who had been so influential that they held most of the high offices, were insulted and their tax-free land grants were revoked. Sanskrit books were destroyed. There are even mentions of forced conversions. However, this reign of bigotry and terror wouldn't last. Sikandar Shah's son, Zain al-Abidin, became Sultan in 1420, and he couldn't have been more different than his father. Where his father is called the iconoclast, Zain al-Abidin is remembered as Bodh Shah, or the Great King. He was the Akbar of Kashmir before Akbar actually lived. He was also influenced by the Sufis, but not the puritanical ones such as Hamdani, but rather the more tolerant ones such as the Rishis. He improved relations with the Hindus and the Buddhists by revoking his father's intolerant policies. He revoked the jizya and reintegrated Hindus into his court. He went so far that he wrote letters to Kashmiris who had fled Kashmir due to persecution and asked them to return. And he even told the Muslims who had converted from Hinduism under pressure that they could revert to their old faith. He also reconquered lands that had been lost. He even minted silver coins in Kashmir, which shows that his realm was economically prosperous. He patronized scholars of both Sanskrit and Persian and turned this isolated valley into a hub of culture. Not only did his court and people associated with him produce original works in both languages, they also translated them between the two. Sanskrit works like Mahabharata and Prithviraj Vijay were translated into Persian, and Persian works such as Shahnameh and Yusuf wa Zaleha were translated into Sanskrit. In fact, Kashmir was such an active hub of literature that Yusuf wa Zaleha was translated into Sanskrit only 20 years after being first composed in Persian. Zain al-Abidin's reign marks a transitory period where, at the start of his reign, both Sanskrit and Persian were spoken by the people in addition to their native language of Kashmiri. Brahmins were studying Persian classics while Iranians were studying Sanskrit classics. Must have been quite a sight. Zain al-Abidin declared Persian to be the official language of the state. Persian became the everyday written language of Kashmir while Kashmiri itself remained spoken by people. Slowly, Sanskrit would disappear from the valley, at least until the modern era. At the same time, his reintegration of Hindu Brahmins into politics created an elite class called the Kashmiri Pandits that provided India with state officials and even state ministers well into the 20th century. By the end of Zain al-Abidin's 50-year reign in 1470, Kashmir was a formidable Persianized sultanate in India, no longer isolated from the greater Persianate and Sanskrit worlds around it. By this time, we can also say that it probably had a Muslim majority. After him, the state started to decline. There was a power struggle between the local Rajas of Kashmir and the Puritan Sufis, or Sayyids, left behind by Sayyid Ali Hamdani. This led to the sultans being puppets. Additionally, a religious leader named Mir Shamsuddin Iraqi became prominent during this time and preached his rather Shia-oriented doctrine, which became popular for a while. This went on for some 70 years. One regional leader would prop up a puppet king who would be deposed by another puppet. Eventually though, a Mughal mercenary invaded and took over Kashmir in 1540. He wasn't the ruler, he was just the puppet master. He paid lip service to the Mughal emperor Humayun. While he was a decent ruler, he cracked down on Shia and Hindu minorities, which led to a popular revolt in 1550 that ended up overthrowing and killing him. The Shamiri dynasty was overthrown in 1555 by the Chak dynasty, who ruled until 1586 when the Mughal Empire annexed Kashmir. Kashmir has not been an independent state ever since. The Mughal emperors loved Kashmir and always talked about its beauty and peaceful climate. They often stayed there during summers. They appointed governors, sometimes good, sometimes bad, but this continued until Shanshah Aurangzeb died in 1707. The Mughal dynasty began to collapse and so did authority in Kashmir. During the collapse, instability led to population decrease. A sort of pattern appeared where Shias and Hindus would band together to fight persecution by the Sunni Mughal governors. However, Kashmir kept hemorrhaging people, especially Hindus. In 1753, Ahmad Shah Abdali of the Abdali Empire in Afghanistan invaded and conquered Kashmir. His Afghans kept governing it till around 1773 when Abdali died and was succeeded by Timur Shah. Then, Afghan authority in Kashmir declined slowly, which led to locals and Afghans clashing over control. This finally ended in 1819 when Kashmir was annexed by Maharaja Ranjit Singh of the Sikh Khalsa Empire. 480 years of Muslim rule in Kashmir was brought to an end. When the Sikh Empire was destroyed by the British, a ruling nobility was able to pay them and secure Kashmir in their name. The Hindu Dogra dynasty continued to rule the Muslim majority of Kashmir until in 1947, Pakistan and India won independence from the British Empire. Kashmir, like other princely states, was given the choice of joining India or Pakistan or staying independent. The Dogra Maharaja, Hari Singh, wanted to be independent. Pakistan invaded Kashmir and Hari Singh signed a deal with India, giving Kashmir and its Muslim population to India. Today, some of it is under Indian control and some under Pakistani control. However, both claim all of it. Whatever the two nuclear powers want, the will of the Kashmiri people has been ignored in this mess that the British left behind. For almost 4.5 centuries, the Kashmiris have not been able to govern themselves. See you next time. Don't forget to subscribe and press the bell icon. On screen right now, you can see the names and tiers of the patrons. You can join them by pledging a dollar or more to support the channel. Thank you for watching.